we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Great to be back with you. Had a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. I hope you did as well. And hope you're looking forward to a great New Year's Eve tomorrow and New Year's Day on Thursday. I love this time of year. It feels like a reset all the time, you know, just to kind of reevaluate, all right, how'd the year go? What are we going to do going into the new year? And this is a great turning point time. I mean, this flipping of the page from 2025 to 2026 is pretty incredible. We had an amazing, amazing 2025. I don't think you can exaggerate how many victories took place. Now, I get that there's a lot of things that we wanted to have happen that didn't have happen, or, you know, frankly, a lot of prosecutions and would love to see more of the accountability for so many things. Obviously, not happy about all the DOGE efforts being pushed aside. I mean, there's many things we could complain about here at the end of the year. But on balance, when you do the cost-benefit analysis on 2025, it's remarkable. We had an incredible, incredible year, including some big, big items. Obviously, with President Trump winning, you know, and a new administration that is, you know, frankly, I think the most aggressive, fearless Republican administration that I've ever seen. Democrats do this all the time. And when they get the power, they use it. They get it. They understand they're only going to have that lever of power for so long. So they want to move the Overton window. They want to move the whole perception of the American people to the left. So they do it on every front. So that's why it felt like whack-a-mole when Obama comes into office. It was incredible. I mean, for 8 years, he was winning. He was gaining ground for the left. It was incredible for them. It was heart-sick, you know, sickening for us and very difficult. But that's because they didn't slow down. They used the power that they had. Same thing with the Biden administration. The auto pen was very aggressive. Joe Biden, of course, was not, because he was out to lunch the whole time. But auto pen, whoever that was, and the leftist behind the scenes that were calling the shots and running the show, they didn't even need a president. They had a shell of a person to put out front, and then just did all of their gaining of ground behind the scenes. And so normally Republicans get control and they're wimpy about it. They, you know, they're afraid to use the power. Oh, we got to make sure everybody likes us, and we got to be nice, and we got to, you know, we got to keep everybody, you know, a seat at the table so that when they get the power back, they'll be nice to us. And it's just so sickening. I mean, it literally turns your stomach to watch what most of these Republicans do when they get in charge. And there's a lot of those in Congress right now. There's some of those people in the administration. There's certainly a lot of Republican governors like that. But thankfully, Donald Trump is not like that. He became radicalized in 2020 with the way that they treated him, and in the years after that with all of the lawfare. And he had no choice but to recognize that this is a war for the heart and soul of the American people and what our government's going to look like and whether or not we're going to be a free nation or a tyrannical nation. He figured that out, and his attitude totally changed. And so he came in guns a-blazing in January of this year, and it's been an amazing year. His executive orders alone have been some of the boldest moves I've ever seen from a president. They are significant actions, and I did not review every single one of them in detail. I will admit, I did not keep up with all of them. But when I did dive into them, I was impressed with how well researched and documented and constitutional they were. The administration was very careful to push the envelope everywhere they could without doing the Obama, I've got a phone and a pen thing, without just making this up and writing new laws on their own. They used legislation on the books that had been passed by Congress and signed by a previous president at some point. So it was the law of the land, and they used that through the executive order process to literally execute the laws. And it really did. I mean, I don't think you can look at 2025 any other way than to say that it resulted in some of the sum total of the greatest political victories and movement back to the right. In other words, the Overton window moved so far to the left during Obama and during Clinton and during Autopen that even moving back a little bit to the right was seismic. I mean, huge. So we not only stopped the progress of the left in destroying our country, but we took ground back in 2025. And I think set ourselves up to take a significant amount of ground back in 2026. The timing, and part of the reason I said what I did at the beginning of the program about this moment, this flipping of the page from 2025 to 2026 being so cool, is because 2026 is going to be the year to rebuild. 2025 was quite literally the year of uncovering the corruption, of exposing so much of the bad, of stopping many of those who were in positions of power and continuing to use it, and then setting us up to take more ground back in 2026 as we celebrate the 250th birthday of the nation, and we study the Declaration of Independence throughout this year. We're going to be talking about what government should look like or not look like. So let me start with that for today's headlines and issues. I mean, obviously everybody's talking about Minnesota. The Somali scam is not only in Minnesota, it's in Washington State, it's in frankly all over the place. This daycare scam is just one example of not even just billions. In fact, I saw Elon Musk tweeted last night that he thinks that the fraud is probably 20-25% of the federal budget, which means it's around $1.5 trillion. Now let that sink in for a second. The fraud that our government is funding with our money is around $1.5 trillion every year. So you bring that down to a micro level, and what we're seeing in Minnesota with these fraudulent daycares, with these Somali refugees making hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, Michelle Bachman warned me about this several weeks ago. We had her come speak to the Patriot Academy students, and she's a former congresswoman from Minnesota, so she's been dealing with these people like Ellison and some of these other congressmen that are left-wing nuts. She's been dealing with them for years. And so she saw this happening and did everything she could to bring attention to it and try to stop it, but didn't have the political power. Well, look, this Nick Shirley, you know, kid with an iPhone has caused it to go viral, and now the momentum is there. If the Trump administration really does pursue and prosecute this, it could be a huge turning point. But Michelle was telling me how each and every one of these Somalis will start their own nonprofit and somehow funnel all of these government dollars into their own bank account. She said, it's sickening. You watch them drive around in fancy cars, expensive cars. We've seen the videos and people talking about they just, you know, stand around smoking cigarettes and no kids are going to these daycares and they're banking hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's just disgusting. But it's only one issue. The daycare scam is just the tip of the iceberg. And so I want to try to bring our attention to this is an example of why government should only do what only government can do. And government should only do what we the people have told it to do and authorized it to do in our Constitution. So look at the fraud, not just in the daycares. I mean, this one's going to be, right now they're saying $10 billion, I think, is the number in Minnesota. It's going to be hundreds of billions before it's over. That's just the daycare thing. Okay, what about the welfare thing? What about the Department of Agriculture paying, what, 150,000 dead people? The SNAP benefits and other welfare benefits? 500,000 people getting double payments? How about the COVID disaster itself? Did that not prove to any thinking person that the federal government is an abject failure at trying to micromanage your health care? That the federal government is incapable of even giving proper warnings about a plague or a virus? That the federal government actually is, they don't have the Center for Disease Control, they have the Center for Disease Creation. They have the Center for Demented Confusion. How about USAID? Hundreds of billions of dollars being flooded into terrorists and other organizations all over the world from our pockets, funding things that we would never support. What about the Department of Education? $300 billion a year, right down the toilet. Not a kid educated as a result of the money spent through the Department of Education. All of these employees living off of you and me, not getting fired. They get civil service. They sit around, do nothing, or they just muck up the works and make it more difficult for people to actually educate kids. How about the Department of Labor? All of this red tape and this intervention between employers and employees, preventing them from being able to have a true free market. Instead, we get the friction into the market where government is mucking up the works. It's literally making it difficult to start a business, to run a business, to hire and fire employees, to make your business as customer friendly as possible. I mean, try firing somebody that is actually running off your customers these days, and you end up in lawsuits and all. It's nuts. What I list, 5-6 agencies? That's just the tip of the iceberg. Elon Musk back in March said that if Doge did its job, we should be able to get rid of, I think he said 200 of the 400 and whatever it is agencies in Washington, D.C. So instead of following his advice and the findings of Doge, Republicans wimped out. They did exactly what I was saying earlier normally happens. They ran for the hills and were afraid to pursue. And on this one, I got to say, Trump, I think, really messed up. I think that was, 2025, amazing year. Again, cost-benefit analysis, on par, unbelievable. Best year politically we've had in my lifetime. But if Trump had kept Elon Musk around and given him the power to do what he was planning to do with the slashing and the cutting of all these agencies that shouldn't have existed in the first place. And the argument I'm trying to make is that the Somali scam, the welfare scams, the COVID disaster, the USAID scam, the Department of Education scam, all of those scams are just further evidence that these things should not even exist. Why in the world are you sending your money to Washington, D.C. to turn around and have it sent back through some state agency to pay for someone's child care? Show me where in the Constitution it says that the people shall be guaranteed to have child care. I mean, apparently, according to these people, the Second Amendment doesn't say the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. No, it says the right of the people to have child care shall be guaranteed. And of course, it doesn't say that anywhere. But we've got this in our minds. We've bought this idea that it's the government's job to pay for people's health care, for their lunches, for their groceries, to pay for their housing. Folks, this is, I don't know, I'm trying to imagine what our economy would look like if we got rid of all these programs, or at the very least, we stopped funneling them through the federal government and they were only at the state level, and then each state could decide whether or not they wanted to have those kind of programs. Hey, if you in California, or you in Minnesota, if you want to pay Somalis to stand around and smoke cigarettes and not take care of kids, if you want to pay for child care, I don't think you should, but if you want to pay for somebody else's child care, and I'm talking about through the government. Now, I think the church should be the one that stands in the gap when people have a need. We should have a social safety net. I'm not arguing against that. People shouldn't starve. We should have our food pantries. We, the people, individually and through our churches and our nonprofits, we should be filling the cupboards of those food pantries and taking care of the people in need. But all of these examples that I'm giving you, those are proof positive that government is an abject failure at taking care of people in need. It's just evidence after evidence after evidence. So what do we do about it? We have to challenge the status quo and rethink the proper role of government. That's what we'll talk about when we come back. The phone number is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this and the other topics we're going to get to when we come back from the break. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Waldman and Rick Green.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wobbin and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me, talking about the largesse of government, the waste of government, and so many of these problems would be fixed if we just got back to teaching civics, if we just taught people what the jurisdictional lines are of the proper role of government. I'm not an anti-government guy. I'm a pro-government guy. Government's a God-created institution. We need it, as I said at the top of the hour. And when it does what it's supposed to do, when it's in its lane, it's a blessing. I'm thankful that we have police and a fire department and roads and all those things that are proper functions of our government. I'm thankful that we have the best military on the planet. I'm thankful that we have a pretty effective patent and trademark office, a perfectly constitutional agency that is literally listed as one of the specific 17 enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Those things work well because they're properly they have proper authority, and it's the only way to actually do that and it be effective. I mean, you could argue you could possibly privatize the whole, you know, patent and trademark thing, but frankly, it's one of the few agencies that runs well, smooth, and actually has a positive bottom line, actually makes money. So anyway, my point is, government, especially at the federal level, was never designed to take care of the individual. It's quite literally, if you go, and many of you listening, I know you've taken our Constitution classes, maybe you've done Constitutional Live or Biblical Citizenship or one of our others, but we talk about this a lot. David Barton and I sit there in his museum and we walk through those 17 enumerated powers, and we talk about the proper role of government and why, if government's doing what it's supposed to do, it's a blessing, and if it's outside of its lane, it's a curse. And we talk about how, you know, even the general welfare clause in the Constitution was basically saying the general welfare of the states, not the individual. I mean, how many times have you heard that phrase and thought that that justified, that that made it constitutional for welfare programs to pay for lunches of whoever or housing or whatever other subsidies, that somehow general welfare was the reason you could do that? Well, that's absolutely not true. What that phrase meant in Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 1 was very specifically, it's also in the preamble of the Constitution, but it meant very specifically to the purpose of the federal government was essentially to protect the overall system and the individual states, the general welfare of the states, making sure that you had a free flow of commerce between the states, making sure that you had laws that could be enforced across all of the states, making sure that the system itself, the general welfare, was protected and in place. It does not say individual welfare or neighborhood welfare. And so we got way off track with FDR, frankly, Woodrow Wilson, some of the guys back in the 1900s, early 1900s, took us way down a path that created government programs that were never authorized by the Constitution in the first place, still have not been authorized by any amendment to the Constitution. The only reason those programs still exist even after challenges today is because the Supreme Court went outside of its boundaries and started rewriting the Constitution. And so that's part of the mess that we're in. And so what I'm pushing for in 2026 and through 2027, frankly, and this is part of our Rebuilding Liberty program, is to literally rebuild the walls. So the Nehemiah thing of rebuilding the walls is to rebuild the jurisdictional lines that tell us, okay, here's the things the federal government should do. The United States government should do military, should do trademarks, should do some of these basic things that we expect the feds to do. And then the state government should do most anything else that government is going to do, and then local governments pick up the rest of it. But then most things are actually left to the individual and the family. Self-government is where most of the decision-making should be. You should decide what you eat. You should decide what medical interventions you're going to participate in, what you're going to inject yourself with, what you're going to allow to be in your home. You should decide what school your kid's going to go to. You should decide whether or not you buy health insurance or take the chance. And in a free market where the government is not forcing that kind of thing, if you spend money on health insurance, depending on how much you spend, your care will be better than if you didn't spend as much or you didn't spend any. So if you don't have health insurance, if you decide to make that calculation, either because you simply can't afford it or you just decide you'd rather spend that money on a car or a better house or groceries or whatever, whatever your individual decision is, then when something happens, then that's where your neighbors and your church come alongside you and do the best we can to help. And I do think it's proper for a neighborhood, a community, a city to have some sort of, you know, community-funded hospital that is for the indigent. But here's the thing. If you do that, that hospital that is being funded by other people, not by yourself, when you go to get care, is not going to have as good a care as the hospital where you go pay the bills. That's just the right way to do things. That's the way that the market works. That's actual justice. That's actually making sure that we're not violating one of the fundamental rules of humanity, which Thomas Jefferson described as taking from the mouth of labor bread it has earned to give to someone who hasn't been as industrious. That's the problem with robbing Peter to pay Paul. That's the problem with taking your money and turning around and paying for somebody else's school lunches, or taking your money and turning around and paying for somebody else's house. So if you allow for the market to decide and you leave people with more of their own money, just think if your federal tax bill was cut in half. Let's say that you pay, you know, let's do easy math, $10,000 a year in taxes. Let's say you make $100,000 a year, and after all your deductions and adjusted whatever, you pay roughly $10,000 a year in taxes to the federal government. And if we were to say, hey, we're going to reset the table. We're going to shift a lot of the power away from the federal government. We're going to shrink the size of the federal government in half. So instead of the federal government spending $6, $7 trillion a year, did I really just say six, seven? I did, didn't I? Anyway, instead of them spending $6 or $7 trillion a year, we're going to cut it in half, and they're only going to spend three. And you're going to get to keep 5,000 of that 10,000 that you were sending off to Uncle Sam to be wasted on Somali refugees that were here probably illegally anyway, standing around smoking cigarettes, not actually taking care of anybody. Instead of doing that with your money, we're gonna let you keep it. And so now you got 5,000 extra bucks in your pocket. Now, I realize that some people, they're just going to spend that on themselves no matter what. And then other people are going to say, you know what, that means I can give an extra grand to the church this year. That means I can give a grand to Patriot Academy to go educate people on civics. I can give a grand to American Family Association so that my favorite radio programs stay on the air and they can have these conferences where they're rebuilding liberty and all of these things. I can give a grand to my local hospital so that we can take care of people in our community. You would get to make that decision. And don't you think that money would be better used and the people you give it to more accountable than these Somali refugees that aren't actually taking care of kids anyway? I mean, of course. When we do individual philanthropy to local organizations or to a person, we hold them accountable. I don't give money to an organization and never look back. I look at their 990s. I look at what they're spending their money on. And if they're paying a bunch of executives $900,000, $950,000, $1 million, I'm not going to give them money anymore. Not in the nonprofit world. I'm a free market guy, and I think you ought to be able to make as much money as you want when you provide a good or service to the marketplace and people pay for it. You should be able to pocket as much of that as you can and still make your business operate. But in the nonprofit world, I do think there are limits to what you should get paid. I get paid around a fifth, like one-fifth, 20% of what I would make if I just went out and started practicing law tomorrow. But I run a nonprofit where I spend most of my year asking people to donate to our organization so that we can educate Americans on the Constitution and prepare young people to be leaders. Well, if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to ask you to give $1,776 a month out of your hard-earned money, or if I'm going to ask you if you're retired and you've got a nice nest egg and you're willing to donate $100,000 to help sponsor a student cottage at our campus, I want you to be able to go look at my 990 at the end of the year and know that I am not getting rich off of your donation to help educate kids, that I'm actually sacrificing. I'm asking you to sacrifice, therefore I'm going to sacrifice. So I'm literally living in a little bitty 900 square foot cottage, moved out of our really nice place and our family compound, and we're sacrificing. And I'm driving a 2011 pickup truck with 330,000 miles on it, and my wife drives a 2017 with 200,000 miles on it, and we're having the time of our life. We love what we're doing. We love living in that little cottage. We love driving those trucks around the campus and around town and doing what we love to do because God's called us to this. And we're willing to sacrifice so that you feel good about making a donation and so that most of your donation goes to the kids that we're trying to educate, goes to the buildings to help educate them, goes to the new Constitution programs and all the different things that we do. You can hold me accountable far better than you can hold Donald Trump or, excuse me, one of the, how are you going to hold Brooke Rollins accountable at the Department of Agriculture? I mean, Brooke's great. She's a conservative, wonderful gal, Texan. She started Texas Public Policy Foundation. She's great. And she's the one that is exposing a lot of this fraud with the school lunches and everything. But I mean, I've known her for years, but I can't pick up the phone and call her anymore. Can you? Can you hold her accountable and say, hey, why are we still paying those 150,000 dead people? Why are you still doing double benefit? No, you can't. You can't. It's impossible. And a lot of the things that they're uncovering are not going to get solved. They're going to get lost in the news, and everybody's going to get busy and go do other things. But I guarantee you, if you pulled my 990 and you looked on our 990 and you saw that we were, you know, that I was getting paid $700,000 or $800,000 a year or something ridiculous, you would pick up the phone and call me and say, Rick, God bless you, I love you, but I'm not sending my $1,776 a month anymore. I'm not going to sacrifice to send $100 a month or sponsor a cottage or whatever. You're going to say, you know, good luck, but I don't like how you're spending the money anymore. You're paying yourself too much. And you should have every right to do that. And then I should learn from that and go, man, you know, maybe that is way too much. Maybe I need to be making way, way, way less than that, which I make way, 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 way less than that. Anyway, my whole point is the private market works so much better because you can hold people accountable. So the federal government should only do the 17 things in the Constitution. And if we want it to do more, if we want it to be involved in, you know, making certain drugs illegal or making, and I'm trying to think of a new power or a new thing we would want the federal government to do that's not in the original Constitution or in one of the 27 amendments. But if you got something new, if times have changed and you want it to, in fact, you could argue that air traffic obviously should be done at the federal level. And you could argue that it's authorized under Article 1, Section 8 with regard to the post offices and post roads clause, because that's essentially the post office or the roads of today is the air in addition to the highway system. So maybe you don't need a constitutional amendment to do that, but I'd be for a minute. That's a power that I would say, yeah, probably better to be done at the federal level. And then we need to start thinking about, okay, once we say they're only going to do these things, how do we shift that power back to the states and to us, to we the people? How do we get the care of those in need back to the church, back to the neighborhood and the family? Because if we did that, the person in need is going to be so much better taken care of and more than likely get back on their feet sooner because of the accountability and the people coming alongside them instead of just getting a blank check in the mail. And you cut out all the fraud. So now when you cut out all the fraud or most all the fraud, you're able to get more of the money directed to the people actually needed. I hope that makes sense. I hope I'm not running in circles here. We're almost out of time for this segment. So before we go to break, let me try to get to at least one of our phone calls. 888-589-8840. Laurie, let's try it. I may have to cut you off for the break and get you to hang with me, but go ahead. You're up first today.
Okay. I just wanted to say something about the Department of Ed. I've been teaching for 38 years, mostly in Chicago public schools. That department did not give one penny to the education of the children.
Yeah.
Not one. Anything in the classroom other than chairs and desks, they're provided by the teachers.
And then they turn around and they probably harassed you. It's like they're not helping you, yeah. But you probably had all kinds of red tape that you had to deal with on an annual basis from the Department of Education, yeah, even though they're not actually helping you.
Well, when Common Core came in, it destroyed our school because we had done our own curriculum, and we had the highest gain in the state of Illinois in an inner city school in Chicago in math and reading, and then Common Core came in.
Yeah, it's destroyed
education.
Yeah, I have never seen a federal government program improve education. It's always made it worse. And I don't know that you could. I don't know of any. Thank you so much, Laurie, for calling in, by the way. It's a perfect example of what we're talking about. And, you know, maybe the one thing that could potentially improve, but it's still not the best way to do it, is if you were to take the $300 billion that's going from our pockets to the federal Department of Education and then doled out mostly to bureaucrats. If you were to take all of that money and say, we're going to keep 10 guys or gals on staff, and we're going to block grant that money to the families. So every school child in America that's getting an education K through 12 would get probably about $4,000 or $5,000. If you did that, that would be true competition. More kids would be able to choose a magnet school or whatever school that specializes in what they're interested in. More families would be able to choose a homeschool or private school. That's probably one way you could go through the federal government and actually improve the overall education system. But honestly, it shouldn't even be done that way. Forget it. Stop spending a penny through the federal government. And then states that want to have competition and block grant that money to parents could do it on their own. But it's just a mess. And that's where I do think in 2026, we have a chance to change the conversation and reset the table. So that's what I'm kind of setting us up for here in our final week final couple of days of 2025. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. 888-589-8840 is the phone number here on At the Core.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Final segment of the day. Man, I didn't get to any of the other headlines, but I don't want to miss these phone calls. So let's go back to the phones. 888-589-8840. We've been talking about all the waste, the Somali refugees, the billions of dollars that have been funneled to illegal aliens, to some that we let in legally when we should not have. They certainly did not assimilate into our culture. And I remember Michelle Bachmann telling me, for them, this is just, you know, par for the course. Like, this is part of their whole mentality and their way of life. It's not fraud to them. If there's a way to game the system, they think you're an idiot if you don't do it. So that's the kind of that's the kind of people you should not invite into your country, right? You don't bring people here that don't match our values. If they're not going to have some sort of Judeo-Christian ethic of right and wrong, of moral absolutes, I mean, let's just go to the Declaration. What are we going to do this year in 2026? We're going to celebrate the 250th birthday of a document that says we hold these truths to be self-evident. So that's right and wrong. That's moral absolutes. If you don't believe in that, you ought not be allowed into the country. That we're endowed by our Creator. So you believe there's a God. You believe that your rights come from God. You believe that government's instituted among men, deriving its just powers from the consent of the governed, and that we decide those things. So if you don't buy into that, we shouldn't let you into the country. Okay, I didn't mean to digress there. Let's go to David in Texas. You're up next. David, go for it, man.
Hey, Rick. It's good to talk to you. And we met this summer at the Founding of the Fathers workshop.
Well, thanks for coming to that. That was amazing, man. Mark Adams has an incredible place, doesn't he?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've told so many people about it since that time, just because that's special on its own right, but the other part of it was just awesome.
No doubt.
Yeah, so my comment, Rick, is to, you know, I mean, we could talk about that forever, but, you know, in a short time, yeah, my frustration is, as you noted early on in the program, just the, you know, Doge identified so much stuff. It's like every time they turned around, you know, it's rampant. And, right, and it goes to the fact that, you know, all of a sudden when that hits the news, all of a sudden all these politicians go, oh, my God, this is incredible. Well, we're really going to have to look into this. And zero happens. I haven't seen any prosecutions. Every one of those is a federal crime that they have committed. And yet it's just like, we don't care. We're not going to do anything about it. We want to accept illegality is legal. That's just wrong.
Man, it's literally, it's right back to that we hold these truths to be self-evident. It's literally not having the common ground, right? You cannot have a society, let alone a nation, where you can't agree on what's right and wrong, because otherwise your laws will be a mess and you're going to be at each other's throats all the time. I mean, it's the reason we have a e pluribus unum, out of many, one. So we come from all these different backgrounds and countries and everything else, but we become one. We become Americans. We become students of this way of life, and then we protect and preserve it for the next group. Good stuff, brother. Thanks for calling in, man. I'll see how many more we can get to before we're out of time today. Let's see. I've got in Illinois, Luana. Luana, you're up next. Go ahead.
Hey there. Thanks. I just wanted to say I agree with everything you said, and I'm really happy that President Trump is going as he is, because it seemed like the Biden administration had tentacles like an octopus and into everything.
Yeah.
Now, my first thought was that President Trump learned quickly, and he's doing, you know, everything to me just fine. And anyone that looks at what President Trump is doing now, most will benefit our children, but mostly for our grandchildren. President Trump is showing that he loves America and what it stands for. And the distractions that happened in the previous administration, most people fell for it, especially Black people, and cheers to President Trump. That's what I had to say.
Well, I love it. And you know, you're right. It's like you measure the year on the whole, like all the good and the bad and the ugly, and you look at it and you go, this was probably the most lopsided year for the good stuff to actually get back to some of those values that you're talking about. And like I said at the beginning of the program, you know, we just don't usually see Republicans press the gas like that. As you said, the Biden administration certainly did, and previous administrations. And, you know, I don't know if you're seeing the same thing in Chicago where you live, but well, you said Illinois. I don't know if you're in Chicago. What part of Illinois are you in? Oh, did I lose you? Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask her if because I'm seeing in Black communities all over the country just a rebirth of a love of liberty and wanting to get to the facts, wanting to get to what actually produces a good society. I've seen more. In fact, we're working with a lot of inner city schools, private schools, where, man, these teachers are raising these kids up to be Bible based, strong foundation, constitution understanding. It's phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. There is a renaissance happening right now, and I'm thrilled to be a part of it. Okay, let's go to Hartwell in Louisiana, going over to Cajun Country. Hartwell, go ahead.
Hi, I'm just calling to thank you so much for what you're doing. I listen to you every time you own, and that's all I have.
Well, thank you, man. I'm thrilled to get to do it. I'm blessed to do what we do, and certainly American Family Association is blessed to be a voice in the culture, impacting in so many areas, from judges to just general civics and education and application of biblical values. In fact, I was listening on the break to that quick clip with Abe Hamilton, and I was thinking, man, I love that guy so much. What a blessing to have those kind of hosts here at American Family that not only dive into the scripture and into the Constitution and into all these things, but they do it with such fervor and with such entertainment, and it makes it fun to learn. So absolutely, Hartwell, God bless you, man, and thanks for Louisiana. All right, Patty in Iowa, you're up next. Patty, go ahead. You've got the floor.
I wanted to ask you a couple of things, Rick, and thank you for what you do. Do you know what happened with the 1776 commission that President Trump started toward the end of his first administration? That's one thing.
Yeah.
Federal education dollars could go to continue, because blue states aren't going to teach their kids the true history of our nation and the meaning of our Constitution, but it needs to be done.
Yeah.
And then
go,
I wanted
go ahead.
To ask you something yeah. else about your Patriot Academy. I don't know if you want to answer the first and then...
Well, go ahead, just in case I lose you. So what was your second thing? And I'll try to hit both of them at once.
Okay. I was hoping that maybe conservative groups like yours could press teaching kids the importance of supporting Israel. More and more young Republicans and conservatives are turning against Israel.
Yeah.
And, you know, for us to be blessed, we need to support them. God never changed his mind. He said if the sun or the moon quit shining, then he'll turn against Israel. He disciplines them. But, I mean, they are a blessing to us. They're the only democracy or republic in the Middle East.
That's right. No, you're spot on, Patty. Both questions. I'd say to the first one, it of course, you know, the 1776 commission Trump did right at the end of his first term, and of course the Biden Otto Penn administration came in and literally just threw it in the trash, took it off the website day one. How much do you have to hate your own country to not want to celebrate her birth and her founding documents? But that's what they did. And so what President Trump did the second time around is it went way beyond that commission. And I had some friends that were serving on that commission, and most of their work and what they were planning to do is now being done through the 250th effort. And it's actually, God's timing is perfect. And so had President Trump gotten his second term back to back to his first term, he wouldn't be president during the 250th. And I think it's absolutely perfect that he is president during the 250th. So we're actually working with the White House on a lot of these things. There's going to be all these celebrations throughout this year, a lot of education, a lot of events all over the country, not just celebrating with, you know, fireworks and food, but actually getting people to understand why they're waving the flag, why this document is worth talking about and celebrating. So I'm actually excited. I think it's an even better outcome than had he had the second term to be able to do his 1776 commission. And then on Patriot Academy, to your point, yeah, 100%. This is a huge issue. In fact, I'll take my final few minutes to address this issue because you're exactly right. It has become a dividing line on the right, unfortunately. Excuse me. There is a massive effort to divide conservatives and divide Christians over the Israel issue. So I always take this issue. Here's the way I teach it to the Patriot Academy students. And to your point, we're going to be doing a lot more of that. In fact, we're taking our Patriot Institute scholars. We've got about 26 students that are full time with us for the whole year. And we're going to take them to Israel in April. We're actually going to do a trip to Israel. If anybody out there listening wants to help with that, we do need some help because we're scholarshiping these kids to do that. So go to patriotacademy.com and you can help there. But here's what I say to the kids, because they're getting so many lies. I mean, if you get on TikTok or X or even Facebook and you just scroll through the videos that are out there, the lies and the propaganda are outrageous. And in fact, just yesterday I had a student that came through Patriot Academy like 15 years ago, and one of his comments popped up on my feed, and it was basically saying, that how could we possibly fund the murder of 200,000 children in Gaza? Now, of course, that is not accurate on so many levels. First of all, even Al Jazeera says that it's about 70,000 that have been killed in Gaza, and that about maybe 20,000 of those are children, but they define a child as 0 to 17. So in other words, these 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds that are coming at you with an AK-47, that are pointing an RPG at you, they're calling those children. So when you take them out in order to prevent the death of your fellow soldiers, they're listing that as the killing of a child. So the numbers are definitely skewed. Now, are there innocent children that have been killed? Absolutely. That happens in war every time. And in fact, the 20,000 or even 70,000 total, which is, if it's Al Jazeera, you know it's exaggerated. I think Israel puts it closer to 40 total. But let's give Al Jazeera the number. Let's say it's 70,000. On October 7th, the number of Israelis that were murdered in cold blood, raped, drugged through the streets, all the horrific things that Hamas did to them, if that were done to the United States on the same level per capita, it would be 40 to 50,000 Americans murdered, raped, drugged through the streets, put on television as they celebrate beating them and killing them. Okay, if that happened to us, what would we do? What would we actually have the right to do? Under any concept of just war theory, you absolutely have a right to retaliate and prevent them from doing it again. We did far worse, especially in terms of civilian deaths versus combatant deaths. We did far worse than what Israel is doing right now in World War II, in Iraq with Desert Storm, and all of the, I mean, the idea that Israel is the bad guy I can't even get my head around that. When you put it in the context of world history and in the context of what we Americans have done in response to barbaric acts of murder in our own. Think about it. Japan only killed 3,000 at Pearl Harbor. The Islamic terrorist only killed about 3,000 on 9/11. And we killed hundreds of thousands in response to that. The Hamas terrorist killed close, what, 1,200? My brain just went away. It was either 1,200 or 1,500. I can't remember now. On October 7th, out of 9 million. So again, it would be like killing 40 to 50,000 Americans. So 100% Israel has the right to do everything that they have done. And when the terrorists are hiding behind women and children, when they are hiding literally in hospitals and churches, they are the ones choosing to have that destruction take place. It is impossible to wage war without having civilian casualties. I hate it. We should all hate it. It's horrible. It happens in every single war. And so when you look at the civilian to combatant deaths, I do think Israel's claim that it's that theirs is better, that their ratio is better than any in history. I think that's exaggerated. I think that data is not accurate either. And I don't defend Israel outright. I don't defend everything that Israel does. I don't think we should give them a blank check. Israeli kings in the Bible were good and evil. You don't just give a blank check and say we're never going to question you or we're never going to disagree with you. That's not what any of us are saying. But to our caller's point, it's about Western civilization. It's not even about Israel. I get the biblical arguments, and we could argue that all day long. But just from a political, geopolitical, who are our allies? She's 100% right. They're the only democracy, the only republic in the region. They're the only free market economy. And Gazans who live under Israeli rule will have free enterprise. They'll have jobs. They'll have good education. They'll have good health care, all of those things. Whereas if they live under Hamas rule, it'll be a totalitarian state where they're starving to death. So what do you want for them? What do you think is the right thing to happen over there? All right, enough of my rant, but this stuff is building up. I tell you, I am shocked at the people from our side that have been willing to make Israel the bad guys. Does Israel do bad things? Absolutely, just like our American government. But to say that Israel's the problem and not Islam, I think your moral clarity dial is completely destroyed. If you have bought that lie, and you actually repeat these pithy statements that the real problem we need to deal with is Israel and the Zionist and not Islam. Oh, my goodness. I need another hour, folks, and we're out of time. All right. Sorry that pushed you right up to the limit. Have a fantastic day and a great New Year's Eve tomorrow and New Year's Day on Thursday. I'm Rick Green. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.